Happy to be here to discuss incidental gallbladder cancer because this is one of the more common ways that we see patients that present. So I think it's an important topic to pull out from the previous talk specifically to speak about patients with incidental gallbladder cancer. I have no disclosures. I'm going to speak about how to work up a patient who is referred to you with an incidental gallbladder cancer. And then I'll speak about the treatment. I'll focus a little bit on chemotherapy and specifically the role for neoadjuvant chemotherapy. And then I'll talk about some themes for surgery and reoperating on these patients. So when a patient is referred after a diagnosis of incidental gallbladder cancer, one of the important parts of this is a review of the pathology. And this can require some work in calling the original hospital, getting the slides, rereading the slides, specifically looking at the cystic duct margin. It can be positive in up to 30% of incidental gallbladder cancer cases. Sometimes the original blocks need to be obtained from the original hospital, and additional pathology needs to be run. I also think it's important to talk to the surgeon who did the laparoscopic or open cholecystectomy when the diagnosis was made. They're often usually very appreciative to speak to whoever's going to be doing the next operation. And all the details don't always come across in an operative note. And was there some spilled bile? How did the surgeon extract the specimen? What was their impression going into the case? What imaging did they have? Oftentimes, it's only ultrasound, but an ultrasound can really help with a re-review and trying to figure out where the disease was present. It's important to get serum CA19-9 and CEA. Both can be elevated with gallbladder cancers. And now is the time to figure out if they're elevated, because if they are elevated and you then go on to reoperate, you'll use the change in those levels to judge whether or not there is additional recurrence in the future. It's important to do radiographic staging and determine the timing of the reoperation, and I'll go into that a bit further. So as Dr. Bilcek mentioned, there's now been an addition to the staging to separate T2 into the hepatic side and the peritoneal side. So I'll click through this quickly since it was just discussed, but it is important to know that this is for the T2 cancers, and this is something that we now ask our pathologists, and also that preoperative ultrasound can be helpful if there's some confusion on the pathology side. Now, what radiographic imaging should be done for staging? We generally use a high-quality CT scan of the chest, a triphasic liver CT, and a pelvic CT. But PET scans have also been looked at. This is a series looking at 100 patients with gallbladder cancer, and 63 of these had incidental gallbladder cancer. And what we found was that PET change management in a third of the patients with primary gallbladder cancer, but it was actually very rare that PET had any change in management in the patients with incidental gallbladder cancer. And most likely this is because it's very challenging to interpret PET avidity after someone has had an operation. By definition, the gallbladder bed will be PET avid just from the inflammation, as may some nodes around the porta hepatis. So I don't see the utility in using PET scan in this situation, unless there is a distant area on a CAT scan that you have a question about, in which case PET avidity in that situation may help clear up what is an unclear finding on a CT scan. This is one of the more interesting studies about incidental gallbladder cancer. It comes from the UK. It's a retrospective study of 2003 to 2011. And they had 49 patients with incidental gallbladder cancer, T2 and T3. Half had R1 resections, and more than half had gallbladder disruptions. And the patients were diagnosed with this, and then they had no workup at all. And 3 months later, they had a staging CT. No chemotherapy, no workup, nothing was done. 3 months later, they returned, and they had a staging CT. Half the patients were resected after the staging CT. Half the patients never went to the operating room. And the reasons why were all of this: vascular involvement, peritoneal metastases, combinations of liver and peritoneal and lymph node and distant metastases. All but one of these was picked up on the imaging. So this starts to give you an idea about how aggressive gallbladder cancer is and why we should even start thinking about neoadjuvant chemotherapy. Because just in a test of time of 3 months, half the patients failed. And in reality, they, in my opinion, avoided an operation that really could not have helped them and were better suited by being treated with chemotherapy. So the general rationales for neoadjuvant therapy are a disease with a significant risk of recurrence after resection, some sort of treatment with chemotherapy that has some activity, and the ability to identify high-risk groups. And recurrence, unfortunately, is frequent, and often distant disease is a part of this. This is really the major cause of failure after a re-resection of a patient with incidental gallbladder cancer. So this is 115 patients who had resection done, and you can see the majority recurred within 2 years, and the median disease-specific survival was 42 months. And these curves really mirror each other, which is a sign of a disease that if you have a recurrence, you will not be cured of that recurrence. So really, very aggressive. And when we looked at where were the recurrences, of a minority of the patients, 14%, had only a local recurrence, where you could think, if I had resected 2 centimeters more of the liver, could I have somehow have impacted this patient's outcome? The majority of patients had distant and regional disease. These numbers always surprise me every time I look back at them and see a patient in clinic. The T1B patients, when reoperated on, a third of them have residual disease, either in the gallbladder bed or in the lymph nodes. Half the patients who have T2 disease, residual disease, and 70% of the patients with T3 disease. So really a significant problem, even in the patients with the earliest stage disease where we consider reoperating, the T1B patients. And this was a study where we looked to see what happened with the patients that had residual disease. So this first curve here, we compared the patients that had no residual disease to residual disease. And you can see a large difference in survival here. Then we split them up into categories. So this top line is no residual disease. And then this is the patients who had local, regional, distant, or local recurrent disease. And really, it didn't matter between any of these sites. And we looked a little further, for instance, within T3. So these were the patients who walked in the door with a T3 incidental gallbladder cancer, and this was their survival. Then there are patients we brought back that were T1B, T2, and we found additional disease. And you can see there's a huge difference in survival between these. So basically, the conclusion of this retrospective look was if we found any residual disease in the gallbladder or the lymph nodes, this was associated with a very poor outcome. It's something about the biology of that disease, when there is some still left there, that's associated with a poor outcome. Because of that poor outcome, that really is asking for a different approach than what we currently do. And this is where the idea of neoadjuvant therapy and a test of time comes in. We have to borrow from the metastatic setting to come up with regimens to treat these patients. So there's a nice trial in the metastatic setting, the ABC-02 trial, that compared gemcitabine and cisplatin versus gemcitabine alone. This is, as with most of these studies, it's all sorts of biliary cancers with gallbladder cancers mixed in. And the overall survival was basically 12 months compared to 8 months with the combined combination of gemcitabine and cisplatin. More recently, John Primrose presented at ASCO the results from the BILCAP trial. This is an adjuvant trial of resected cholangiocarcinoma or gallbladder cancer. And patients were randomized to capecitabine in the adjuvant setting or just observation. This is over an 8-year period, and you can see 20% of the patients had gallbladder cancer. And there was a survival difference that was significant, 53 months versus 36 months. So it is, I think this is a practice-changing trial in that it really does offer some more evidence that patients can be treated in the adjuvant setting with capecitabine. But because of the data that I've already shown, so even the T1B patients have a high percentage rate, 33% of them have residual disease. The outcomes, if you have residual disease, are really poor. So because of this, this is really a disease that's asking for a neoadjuvant approach, similar to other aggressive cancers, like gastric cancer, like pancreas cancer. So Shishir Mithel has developed a trial that is not open yet. It's just going through his IRB. This is gonna be an international trial to determine if preoperative gemcitabine cisplatinum in the treatment arm given prior to reoperation for incidental gallbladder cancer followed by postoperative capecitabine is associated with an improved overall survival at 3 years. That's the primary endpoint. And there are secondary endpoints of recurrence-free survival at 1 year and is there a higher resectability rate. The control arm here is patients who are treated with what's considered the standard right now, They come in, they're diagnosed, they go to the operating room, and they're treated with surgery, resection of the gallbladder bed, and lymphadenectomy, and then they're treated with adjuvant capecitabine. And a number of us were involved with Schisher when he was developing this to determine which patient populations should be included in this. And this comes down to the idea of identifying high-risk populations. This is going to be for all T1B, T2, and T3 patients. And the reason why the T1Bs were included is because, as Dr. Bilcek showed, we and Schisher and his data looked back and we tried to determine, can you decide anyone who has such a low risk that it is not worth treating them with chemotherapy? And it's the T1B patients with well-differentiated tumors. And that makes up about 3 or 4% of the population of patients with incidental gallbladder cancer. So in reality, they're not patients that we see. So there will be some patients who are overtreated with chemotherapy in this trial. There's no doubt about that. But we feel that it is the, we felt that it was worth including all of them to see if we could learn something about this neoadjuvant approach. Now, how about surgery? I think there is a role for diagnostic laparoscopy in reoperating on these patients. This was a series of 136 patients. 46 of them had laparoscopy to start their re-exploration. Two of the patients had laparoscopic findings of carcinomatosis. 44 had negative findings on laparoscopy, so had a laparotomy. And 8 then went on to have carcinomatosis, liver metastasis, or retroperitoneal disease. None of this was found at the laparoscopy. But when we looked a little closer at this, it was really in the T3 patients is where there was this yield. So 2 out of the 14 T3 patients had findings, and 2 out of the 6 of the T3 patients that had peritoneal disease or liver metastases had findings. So I think at the least in a high-risk patient, T3 laparoscopy should be used. In general, I favor using it in most of these patients since there is a high degree of residual disease in such a high percentage. We can now start a debate because now I think it's going to be 2-1, Dr. Bilcek and I versus Dr. Fonk. We'll leave this open for debate afterwards. So port site resection, I think, is an important thing to talk about because there can be a real morbidity to this. There's a 15% incisional hernia rate. So when Ajay Maker looked back at this from the Memorial data, this is a comparison here of overall survival on the patients who had port sites resected and not resected. Recurrence-free survival over here, there was no difference. What was found was 13% of the patients that had their port sites resected, 13 patients, 19% did have disease there. It was all in the patients with T2 and T3 disease. But all these patients also developed generalized peritoneal disease. So I think of this really as it's a thermometer of what's happening in the peritoneal cavity. Each of those incision sites is a place where there's a lot of inflammation. Inflammation is a great bed for cancer to grow, and that may be the first place where you see it. But in general, I think other than isolated cases where someone will have one isolated metastasis there, it's really just a sign of overall disease, and I don't think will change management and can lead to significant morbidity. So I'm not in favor of resecting the port sites. The lymphadenectomy is an important part of this for accurate staging. And in the T1A patients, although very few of them have lymphadenectomies, the published data are that it's low rates of positive lymph nodes. T1B patients on the reoperation, about 13% will have positive nodes. You get up to a third of patients in T2 and almost half the patients in T3. So when looking at how many lymph nodes to resect, this is a series that looked at 122 patients that underwent resection. And the median number of nodes examined was 3. And there's a survival difference when the lymph node number was split to 6 or more or less than 6. And this is where this idea of six lymph nodes as the appropriate number to obtain. And this is most likely related to accurate staging with the more lymph nodes that are acquired. What is important is that this has to be a full portal lymph node dissection. This requires an extended Coker maneuver and real skeletonization of the entire portohepatis. And the extent of liver resection is another important topic because there are two options. There's versions of taking out parts of segment 4B and 5. As Dr. Fong mentioned, you can do even less than a parenchymal resection and take out just a cystic plate if there's a question of a very early gallbladder cancer. Or you can do an extended right hepatectomy, which is traditionally what was offered for patients with any stage of gallbladder cancer. So when we look back at the rates of major hepatectomy and associations with survival. This is the patients who did not have a major hepatectomy and those that did, and there was no association with survival between the two, and the patients in the two groups all had similar clinical and pathologic parameters. So there is definitely increased morbidity. The mortality rate for an extended right hepatectomy is anywhere from 4 to 8%, compared to a segmental resection where the mortality rate is less than 1%. So unless needed for margin negativity, I don't see a role for major hepatectomy, extended right hepatectomy, or bile duct resection. And this has been published in multiple studies. So in summary, I think it's important to begin with restaging with a high-quality CT scan. It's important to get a good review of the pathology, to consider neoadjuvant chemotherapy and even some time for high-risk patients. Diagnostic laparoscopy is important. I didn't have time to go into the role of laparoscopic or robotic re-resection here. Dr. Fong touched on this. I now favor doing the re-resections with the robotic approach. I think it's one of the few cases where robotics may actually make things a lot easier. The portal dissection, which I usually start with because then you don't have any blood dripping down from your hepatectomy, is easier done robotically than laparoscopically. And then the 4B5 resection can be done. But it's whatever the comfort level is of the surgeon, but I think there is a role for MIS re-resection. I'm not in favor of resecting port sites, and I think that it's important that major hepatectomy and bile duct resection is really only used after incidental gallbladder cancer when required for margin negativity. Thank you.